This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned for today's program. And I am very pleased to welcome our guest today, Professor Charles Gaiser, who joins us from the University of California, Davis, to talk about biotech and genetic engineering. Professor Gaiser, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Mike.
Well, I appreciate that you were able to be with us today to talk about, I think, a very, very important scientific as well as ethical and moral issue, the issue of biotechnology. Certainly, it seems that it's very, very easy to fall into this issue, and I think a lot of people have, of organic good, biotech bad. And certainly, I've done a number of programs where we have had people on who have been talking about what they perceive to be the dangers of genetically engineered foods and or other organisms. And you are a professor of molecular biology at UC Davis. And I believe, at least, that from the little bit of conversation we had, that you see the possible benefits in genetically engineered and organisms and other biotechnologies, correct?
Yeah, that's true.
Let's talk, if we will, about when people throw out terms like biotech and genetically engineered this or that. What are we really talking about from your perspective as a professor of molecular biology?
Well, biotechnology and genetically engineered refer to two different aspects of some new technologies that have been developed over about the last 15 to 20 years. Genetically engineered normally refers to using new methods to remove a gene from one organism and then put it back in a different way into the same organism or into some other organism. And the power of this technique is that you can move genes from organisms that are not closely related. For instance, we can take a gene from a bacterium and transfer that gene into a plant. This is in contrast to breeding, which is also moving genes between organisms, but there the organisms must be able to cross in one way or another.
It seems to me that, well, let me ask you this to start. Where are we now with these technologies? I mean, certainly we can talk about where we might go with them, but what types of things are actually being done? What's the state of the art of the technology from your perspective?
Well, the primary application outside of research is in agriculture of plants. So a number of plants have been engineered to alter traits in ways that the people who have done this, commercial companies have done this, hope will be desirable to the farmer and hopefully also will be desirable to the public to try and make plants with properties that make them easier to care for in terms of pesticides or herbicides or that have superior traits.
Certainly we've heard about, I think, very, very vocal critics of what's been happening regarding genetically engineered crops,
right,
whether it be the crops of coming out of companies like Monsanto,
right,
and or others. Are these people who are criticizing these types of genetically engineered organisms, this type of technology being used, are they valid criticisms or are they not?
Well, I think most of the criticisms are making statements that there are risks associated with this technology, and I'm not going to deny that. There are risks associated with every technology. The question is comparing risks between new technologies and current technologies, and where I think they're misguided or have been misled is the idea that all of the risks that they ascribe to genetic engineering are unique to genetic engineering. In fact, that's not the case. Essentially, every risk that has been suggested for a danger of genetic engineering is equal in risks associated with traditional breeding.
Talk, if you will, why you say that.
Okay. So one of the most common statements is, well, they don't know what they're doing. These genes go in anywhere, and while they're trying to produce a specific effect, there can be other secondary effects. Certainly, the same thing is true of traditional breeding. People are trying to breed for example, I'll give you one example. They tried to breed potatoes that were more resistant to insects, specifically Colorado potato beetle. So all plants produce pesticides. They've been fighting with insects for millennia, Insects eat plants. Plants don't want to be eaten, so plants have evolved mechanisms to produce pesticides. And potato produces a compound called solanine that's toxic to insects. All wild potatoes and all ones produced by agriculture already have that pesticide in them. It's a natural pesticide that's toxic to humans. So they bred these using traditional breeding methods. They bred to potatoes and got them so that they were really resistant to the Colorado potato beetles. An excellent thing. So that's exactly what they were selecting for and trying to do. But it turns out the potato tubers themselves now produced high levels of solanine, and anyone who ate them would get really sick. And if they ate a lot of them, they could even die. So here's an example of the kinds of problems that people have ascribed to genetic engineering, of these unknown effects of what you're trying to do. You produce something that's different that you can do equally effectively with traditional breeding.
We're talking with Professor Charles Gaser of UC Davis, and we're talking about genetic engineering and biotech. Professor Gaser, is it that people just don't really understand the way that that plants and genetics work? Is that really what you're saying, kind of?
Well, it seems in many cases that seems to be the case, yeah, that people seem to have this idea that traditional breeding is somehow that something completely in tune with nature, when in fact all agriculture is out of tune with nature, whether it's organic agriculture or more conventional agriculture. Agriculture is by its very nature the removal of the natural ecosystem and the replacement with plants that people want to have to eat.
I can almost imagine any number of organic farmers who may be listening right now tearing their hair out and throwing things up against the wall because, for the most part, I mean, what I'm hearing them say is, well, hey, this is in tune with nature. This is what we're doing. And that this genetic engineering is some sort of a Frankenstein experiment, and God only knows what will happen. What we're doing, of course, is good and in tune with the earth, and what these scientists are doing is this really bad thing.
Well, there is no question that certain aspects of the way organic agriculture are done have lower impacts in some respects. But the major environmental impact of agriculture is habitat loss. That's the biggest effect, and the biggest problem with agriculture is, no matter what agriculture you do, so an organic farmer might be growing tomatoes. Well, tomatoes never grew in California. Tomatoes are from South America. They were imported by humans, and in fact, if we stopped cultivating them, they'd be gone in just a few years because they can't survive the dry summer. So any tomato field can't have anything to do with the natural environment of California. It can maybe be in tune with the natural environment around it and cause less damage to the areas around it than other kinds of agriculture that might have outputs that go into the environment around it. But in terms of the area where the organic farm is, it is no longer the natural environment. The gophers, the insects, you know, the organic farmers don't want the animals in there eating their plants any more than the other farmers do. So all of the native organisms are... there's an attempt to exclude them. Organic farmers use pesticides. They use the Bacillus thuringiensis toxin, the same one that's been engineered into corn and cotton plants by Monsanto Company, is routinely used. It's in all of the organic farming catalogs, and they routinely use that pesticide on their crops. And it can drift off their fields a little bit, too, but the nice thing about it is it's biodegradable. And that's the crucial thing about organic agriculture, is its impact is lessened over time by the fact that everything that's used in it is biodegradable. And to me, that is the hallmark of genetic engineering, too. We're engineering things into the plant, and everything about the plant decays after you're done with it. It doesn't persist in the environment. That's the big advantage of genetic engineering over application of some chemicals, especially persistent chemicals.
Are you ready to take a phone call?
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Yes, I heard about a corn plant, I believe, that's iron-rich, that is being developed down at the Davis campus. Is that right?
What you probably heard about is some rice that's being developed by a guy named Ingo Patricus in Switzerland that has much higher levels of iron.
Uh-huh. And what would the benefits be of higher iron levels? I know that we guess that we need more iron. What have you heard are the benefits?
Okay, well, Dr. Patricus is actually not trying to help Americans. He's trying to help people in the developing world, where, in fact, it's not an estimate. It's a fact that 2 billion people in the world currently have iron deficiencies. And that leads to anemia, makes them more susceptible to diseases, etc. Most of the people who have iron deficiencies have rice as their primary staple. They live in China and in India and in Southeast Asia. And to a lesser extent in Africa is rice used. But he has developed rice with, two new properties. One, it accumulates higher levels of iron and can help stave off iron deficiencies in those people who would use this rice as their staple. And second, it accumulates vitamin A. Night blindness, damage to your eyes from lack of vitamin A, affects 250 million children a year in the world. And the idea here is that many of those people eat rice as a staple, and if they could substitute or incorporate into their own germplasm, in their own rice varieties, these genes for vitamin A and iron accumulation, it could alleviate those iron deficiencies and anemia and also this blindness problem.
That's a really interesting point that you bring up, because in part one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the radio program, Professor Gaser, was because I was talking to a man from Argentina when I was in Seattle at the World Trade Organization meeting, and we were discussing this whole issue of biotech and genetically engineered foods. And he was saying to me, he says, you know, for you folks in the United States, genetically engineered food means a tomato that lasts a little bit longer on your shelf. For children on the continent of Africa, it means cassava melons with increased vitamin A and the difference
right.
between being blind or not.
Right.
And that really piqued my interest that perhaps sometimes we can be a little bit cavalier about these technologies because we live in a society and in a country that has abundant levels of food, correct?
That's right. I'm glad you actually brought up Argentina, because one of the other misconceptions that people have is that if we don't use biotech, we'll be using organic farming. And of course, nothing can be further from the truth. The farming in the United States is primarily chemically intensive, and what the biotech crops are not, of course, being incorporated in organic farms because that's been excluded. They're being incorporated into conventional farms. And what most of the biotech crops, even produced by companies like Monsanto, do is reduce pesticide inputs or allow replacement of persistent pesticides with non-persistent pesticides so that you can use Roundup herbicide, a pesticide that's biodegradable, instead of one of Monsanto's other products like Lasso, which is found in groundwater because it persists a long time. Now, in Argentina, they've always been very chemically intensive. They export a huge amount of crops to Europe. And they had been planning on replacing their crops where they use atrazine and another horrible herbicide and Alichlor, Metulichlor, these persistent pesticides that stay in the environment for years. They were going to replace those with Roundup by using these Roundup-tolerant crops. But because these crops have been banned in Europe, that environmental benefit to the Argentinian farmers has been lost. They're still using these more toxic, more persistent, more dangerous pesticides that contaminate the environment instead of replacing them with the Roundup-tolerant plants and the Roundup biodegradable herbicide.
This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We'll be back in just a minute. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, what's your position on genetic engineering of Terminator gene?
The Terminator gene is something that was developed by a company that Monsanto attempted to purchase. There were two purposes of the Terminator gene. One was to protect their crops so that people couldn't take the genes and move them into other things and make use of them, or so that once you planted the seeds, they'd be gone. And I disagree with that. I think saving seeds is a valuable thing. The other purpose of it was to prevent the genes from moving into wild species. And this is one of the big dangers that has been promulgated by groups like the Greenpeace. And yet they're adamantly opposed to the Terminator gene, even for its use in that application. So it does have a purpose there. The other thing I want to bring up is this is another case where they say this big difference between conventional agriculture and genetic engineering. They say, oh, well, genetic engineering could allow these Terminator genes that would, once you plant the seeds, you can grow your crop, but then it doesn't produce any seeds that you can actually use, and that hurts the farmers who normally save their seeds. Well, the same thing has already been in existence through traditional breeding for a long time. It's called hybrid crops. A hybrid crop is a cross between two specific varieties that produces really good seed. When you plant that, it grows up and makes wonderful big tall corn plants. But if you plant the seeds from those plants, they're all scrawny, they're all different, they're every kind imaginable. So the Terminator technology has already been in use by companies selling hybrid seeds, or the equivalent of it, for 25 years.
Let me ask you, Professor Gaiser, because this part of this discussion leads me to a question. Is there not some legitimacy, though, to the concerns that we have various corporate agribusiness entities who then turn around, create these seeds, and then patent these seeds, and allegedly, to some degree, through various economic and trade agreements, wind up wiping out crops, indigenous crops, and then turn around and say, well, we own all of this and you're just out of luck? I mean, that seems to me to be a legitimate consideration here.
It's a legitimate consideration, but once again, through the use of hybrid seed, you can do that without genetic engineering. It's a separate question from the question of genetic engineering.
Oh, I agree with you, and that was one of the things that I discussed with this gentleman from Argentina, that there are two tracks here. One
is
the technology, and then one is the issue of corporate control.
Corporate control of seed stocks, that's exactly right. And I'll make a couple of arguments about that. First, I agree with you that that is a concern, that people can move in, a company can move in with things that it has patented, but it first has to attract the use. So those things that they've patented have to have some utility for the farmers. Farmers are not stupid. All the stupid farmers went out of business a long, long time ago. Farmers are brilliant. And they're not complete fools who will be led around by their nose by companies. There has to be some benefit to them. But if they can be tricked into using these crops, then they could get stuck with that. And that is a concern. It's a little bit outside of my purview because I'm a molecular biologist, not an economist. And in fact, I see that as a problem that's independent of biotechnology. In fact, the improvements that are made by conventional breeding take years and years and are very difficult to introduce into local germplasms, local varieties. In contrast, genes introduced by genetic engineering and traits produced by genetic engineering are mostly single gene traits, the easiest kind to breed. So if there's some desirable trait produced by a company like Monsanto and it goes off patent, patents are only 17 years and we're in this for the long term. We're talking about, you know, the next century and what's going to happen. That's one of the reasons I have a little less concern about patents than some people do. They're gone in 17 years and then everything becomes public. Monsanto's patents on Roundup are running out right now. That herbicide will be available for anybody to make more cheaply, et cetera. The genetic engineering patents, the one on the basis of genetic engineering, has already run out, so that patent no longer holds and anyone can use genetic engineering who wants to. I'm getting off the track here a little bit, but my point is that in fact, the genetically engineered traits are easier to incorporate into local germplasms that have already been adapted for the environment by breeding than are the traits that are produced by traditional breeding of crops.
We're talking with Professor Charles Gaiser, molecular biologist, professor of molecular biology at UC Davis. Caller, you're live on the air.
I was wondering, are they using pesticides of any form on our organic agriculture?
Yeah, they are using a number of pesticides in organic agriculture. They're allowed to use ones that are paradoxically called inorganic, things like a copper spray, which helps to eliminate fungus. That's seen as natural because it's something that's mined directly and not modified. They're allowed to use heat-killed Bacillus thuringiensis bacteria, it's a bacteria that produces a protein that's toxic to a number of kinds of insects, but is clearly safe for humans to eat. They can spray that the last time, and so organic farmers can use that pesticide. And other pesticides that derive directly from plants can be used in organic agriculture.
For preserving fruits like apples, mm-hmm. I bring this up at the health food store. I go to Briar Patch and I keep pointing out, these organic apples look like they have a coating on them.
Uh-huh.
These grapes smell like they have some kind of a preservative on. Are they allowed to use preservatives on the fruit?
I don't know if they're allowed to use the coatings or not. You know, I'm not, like I said, unfortunately, I'm a molecular biologist rather than a farmer. I buy a lot of my produce here at the farmer's market, and none of the apples there seem to have the coating that's similar to the ones that are at the supermarkets. Most of those coatings are simple waxes or things like that that I don't know would be excluded from the Organic Act.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in. Professor Gaiser, getting back to the issue of the technology, what do you see as some of the benefits and also the potential risks of biotech and genetic modification?
So the risks of biotech are similar to the risks of traditional breeding, that we could produce plants that, while we're trying to introduce new traits, have other undesirable traits associated with them. That's the first risk. And that has been addressed partly by the FDA and the EPA asking for tests of these crops. The tests are specifically directed at the genetically engineered crops. So that's one of the risks. A second risk is that some of these genes could become established in the environment. And that's a problem if you grow crops in an area where there are wild species with which they can interbreed. So, for example, in Europe, there are wild brassica species that can interbreed with the canola crops. And one would want to be careful to not plant canola crops there. Canola is a brassica oil plant used to make, you know, canola oil, et cetera. You have to be careful not to plant plants that would have some kind of trait that you wouldn't want to get into the local environment, maybe virus resistance or something like that. So that's a potential problem. That's also a potential problem when you introduce a new breed of species there, a new breed of brassica, that could also transfer some traits into the wild species that would be undesirable.
Let me ask you, because you brought up the issue of the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can couch this question this way. It seems to me sometimes that technology is moving fastly forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder sometimes whether or not it we actually have the ability sometimes to keep up with it, because it's just bringing us forward so quickly, it seems to me. Are the government entities that are charged with protecting the public, are they actually doing that, in your opinion?
I think in this case they're doing a good job. And I think the reason that they're doing a good enough job is that the scientific community is a watchdog organization as well. I mean, we see certain advocates from consumer groups and things like that criticizing biotechnology right now. But in fact, all of the questions and concerns that they brought up and are displaying to the public are ones that we all brought up in the community ourselves 10 or 15 years ago when we first started this kind of research.
Okay.
And each one of those things we looked at carefully and have pretty much answered to our satisfaction that while there are always risks associated with it, the risks associated with it are smaller than the risks of not using this kind of technology.
We talked a little earlier about some of the potential benefits regarding genetic engineering. We talked about increased iron and vitamin A.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other potential benefits that you see in genetically engineered foods and biotech?
Yeah, well, my background originally is as an environmentalist. I'm really worried about effects on the environment of the huge number of people that there are, the 6 billion people there are on this planet now. The biggest problem, as I said, with farming is habitat loss, which is a problem whether you're doing organic farming or not. You know, you no longer have a meadow when you have a farm field. It's gone, and all of the organisms that live there are no longer around, or you no longer have a rainforest, which is a huge problem. The second is the impact of chemicals. And these two balance each other, because organic farming actually produces less food per acre than more chemically intensive farming, so it requires greater habitat loss. But then you have damage to the surrounding habitat from the chemicals. So the other benefit of genetic engineering is this use of less persistent chemistry or reduction in chemistry. The cotton and corn that have their own insecticidal genes in them require way less application of insecticides. Millions of pounds of insecticide were not applied in Texas last year because they planted Monsanto's cotton there. So that's one benefit, is this reduction of pesticide use, and then this Roundup-tolerant stuff that they're using, and also resistant to other herbicides, one called Bosta. These herbicides are ones that are very safe for relatively safe for farm workers, as safe as anything can get, and also are biodegradable. So we reduce the impact on the environment of chemical runoff by use of these crops. And even though they're making big money for Monsanto, I don't care. If they're helping the environment, that's the side that I'm on.
So let me ask you, because so much of the criticisms that I've heard, and I don't pretend to be a scientist, that so much of the criticisms, taking away the issue, if we will, about, you know, who owns what and
right,
patents and all of that, putting that as a separate issue, is what I'm hearing you say is that the technology, if used appropriately,
right,
which is another issue,
right,
is really something that can really be used to benefit humanity in any number of ways. I mean, it certainly seems, if we can have increased yield, less toxics, less destruction of habitat in order to grow crops for the increasing number of people that we have on the face of the earth. I mean, it sounds like the technology has a lot of promise.
I agree. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that this biotechnology is a panacea. We need a whole series of things. The kind of sociological questions that you brought up are actually much more important than any of these technical fixes. But the problem is huge. Peter Raven, the director of the Missouri Botanical Gardens, kind of the founder of the phrase biodiversity, the guy who's really worried, who's estimated that one-third to two-thirds of all the species on the planet could be gone by the end of this century, has said, we need to use every tool at our disposal. We need to use biotechnology. We need to use changes in society. We need to use more efficient food distribution. Most food is wasted. I mean, we wouldn't have to cover all these acres if we could distribute food. The Food First organization, excellent organization, trying to improve food distribution. In fact, I think all of those other things are probably more important than biotechnology. But biotechnology is one tool that I think we've got to apply because the problem is so huge and is going to get bigger as there get to be more people. We can't afford to rule out the use of tools on the basis of some overblown fears. The real danger is in doing nothing.
We've been speaking with Professor Charles Gace, a professor of molecular biology at the University of California, Davis. Professor Gacer, we just have a minute or two left. Any final words or pointing our listeners in the direction of resources or anything else you'd like to share with our audience this afternoon?
Yeah, let me get that. There's a really good webpage that has actually both sides of this issue on it, that has a whole line of things against biotechnology and a whole line of things that are either pro-biotechnology or neutral on it, including all the regulations from the USDA. And can I read off?
California, Davis. Professor Gacer, we just have a minute or two left. Any final words or pointing our listeners in the direction of resources or anything else you'd like to share with our audience this afternoon?
Yeah, let me get that. There's a really good webpage that has actually both sides of this issue on it, that has a whole line of things against biotechnology and a whole line of things that are either pro-biotechnology or neutral on it, including all the regulations from the USDA. And can I read off that URL or is it too complicated?
You go right ahead.
Okay, it's www.cropsoil.uga.edu, and then a little squiggle line slash squiggle line PARROTTLAB, and that'll get you to a page by a guy named Prakash, who is recording all of these different sites so that you can learn more about this. I guess the last thing I want to say is my view is that the risks of biotechnology have been greatly overestimated by a group of people who are largely from environmental groups, and I think they're fighting on the wrong side. I think this is a in-tune-with-nature, using-living-systems method of improving agriculture that will reduce the impacts of pesticides and things like that, and is one of the tools that we have to apply in our efforts to decrease the impacts of agriculture on the world.
Professor Charles Gacer, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thanks a lot.
That's it for this edition of the program. Full Logic Reverse is produced at KVMR-FM Radio, Nevada City, California. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us at Full Logic Reverse, in care of KVMR FM Radio, 401 Spring Street, Nevada City, California, 95959, or at 530-265-9073. I'm Mike Thornton, and we invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.